Welcome to the Fourth Age, a Wheel of Time podcast brought to you by DragonMount.com.
Do you mind if I take us back to a previous conversation on Baron?
Please do.
Sorry, no, there's something I've been wanting to cover again. Just we left the topic, and rightfully so. I love tangents, and I mean, for goodness sake, I run Fairyland. So it's
a crossover tangent. Hello.
So, the Baron's comments about Rand still kind of, you know, hit me, and I still don't feel like I understand exactly what she's trying to say, because this book that she leaves Egwene, initially I was asking, why did she leave with her? Well, it makes obviously a lot of sense, because it does feel like it's a compilation of all of the notes she took about all these people, the Black Aja. Obviously, she joined the group, so it would be her life's work, and certainly, in her mind, it would certainly be one of the most important events, which, you know, this purge will always go down as, right? I mean, being able to find out all these plans and what their goals are, and, you know, but what she says to her is that she doesn't even know what the Dark One's goals are. And so, I mean, I guess it does make sense to me why she didn't really talk to Rand about this, because what is she going to say? Now, I've been studying him for 70 years, and I don't have any idea, so good luck. You know, and she kind of... That what is she going to do? You know, how is she going to really help Rand beyond this is certainly going to help him, you know, in the sense of getting rid of so many enemies, you know, but she doesn't know everything. Obviously, we can't make her into this character, you know, we can't make her, you know, this omnipotent character by any means. So, you know, it does seem like the most information she has, and she kind of feels like she left Rand in good hands. You know, I think when she met Cadswan, you know, we have that moment. Isn't Cadswan, she's thinking about killing at one point, poisoning?
Yeah, she has the poison that she decides then not to place in the cup after. And it was really weird because Cadswan says something, and it seems like a really innocuous thing, like, you know, I really do like tea. I mean, it wasn't that. It was something very simple and didn't seem, at least in my mind, to carry any real significance. And Varen was like, yep, that did it. Okay, I'm not going to kill her now. And it was like, wow, okay.
Yeah, it seems like... sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, what she had was the potion that she had given to Soralia to help her sleep. And I've always been a few minds whether she was going to give Cadswan enough to kill her, which she warned Soralia an overdose would do, or if she was only going to give her enough to make her sleepy enough to possibly use her little compulsion trick on.
Yeah, no, that's...
I hadn't considered that before. I always just assumed that she was going to kill her. I hadn't considered that she was going to drug her so she could try compulsion.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. I mean, yeah, maybe killing her in that instance would have been a little bit... that wouldn't have gone over so well. You know, maybe, maybe that's a good... I think that's a good question to ask, actually. And maybe that's something that he'd be willing to give us, because it's probably not, you know, something directly plot-related, but it would be interesting to know if that was her initial intent.
Yeah, at least we don't know that it's directly plot-related.
Well, yeah, exactly.
I have another pressing question.
It's a Wheel of Time, after all.
Yeah.
I like the way you think.
No. But I have an interesting question, though. Where did Varen learn those weeds for compulsion? I mean, we look at other Black Sisters like Leandrin. Leandrin has this little trick that isn't really compulsion, it's just making them more amiable to agree with her. But then we look at all the other Forsaken, and their version of compulsion is quick and much more efficient and much better than this intricate weave that Varen placed on these sisters. So where did Varen learn that?
Well, that ties in with my theory that she was not Black the entire time, because she reflects while she's using that on the captive sisters that, as I recall, she said that it was one of, you know, like all Aes Sedai seem to have their little childhood tricks that they kind of pick up before they go to the White Tower. I got as I recall, that was hers. And she learned over the years to kind of add to it and cobbled that sort of weirdo weave together, because it was forbidden to do compulsion and no one was going to teach her how to do it. So I submit that as evidence that she was only studying the Black or trying to investigate the Black and became one when she got caught out.
Yeah, she says that it's something akin to compulsion, and then she's in that same prologue. She says it's not truly compulsion as the ancient texts describe it. You know, it seems a little bit different than it doesn't seem to leave the, as we've seen some of the Forsaken use it, you know, depending on how it's used, her weave seems much more intricate in the sense that it's meant to not be detected or not be detectable, you know, and it's meant to kind of go in. It's almost very, you know, I think of it as very kind of, you know, it's not very blunt, you know, it's a very sharp tool, but it's very complex what she's doing to try to pull on the emotions of the person and get them to make choices, but it's not, you're going to go now, you know, and you forget about this when I wake you up type of thing. You know, it's very, it's something she's kind of put together. So maybe she wouldn't, that whole kind of idea that she does not want to be detected kind of feeds into this, maybe this way that she uses this kind of thing that's akin to compulsion, which is, you know, she doesn't want anyone to know what she's doing because she finds it so important that this really complex weave she's put together has that purpose in it. That's kind of how I read it.
Yeah. And honestly, you know, it seems to be much more subliminal than anything we've seen the Forsaken. I mean, for the Forsaken, their compulsion is wipe this person's identity and replace it with one of my own devising. What Varen did, though, was using the person's identity, make them go down certain paths of logic and do what she wanted them to do that way, rather than erasing their identity and replacing it with one that will do what you want to, use their identity and still make them do what you want to. Much more subliminal. No. Honestly, much more nefarious.
I got to disagree with you, Spencer. I don't think it does replace their identity or anything else. It's a compulsion, as the Forsaken normally use it, is basically compelling somebody to do a certain thing and then forget about it. I mean, remember Mogadian used it on Nynaeve and even Egwene, I think, or Elaine, when they were in Tanchico or whatever, and basically she just made them turn out their pockets, give them all the stuff, answer her questions, and then forget she was there. That's compulsion. I don't recall any particular instance where there was a loss of identity and replacing it with something else. So I got to disagree with you.
Except for all of Grendel's pets.
Well, Grendel, her compulsion was like a hammer, and I don't think that she really replaced their identity so much as just submerged it under layers and layers of you're going to do whatever I want to.
I think their identities were still there. Would be another example of compulsion that was used so extensively that it had the effect of replacing her identity, but I don't think it was necessarily the compulsion itself, like that weave specifically, that replaced her identity. I think that when Morghese was under Ravine's control, he was using it so extensively that it had the effect of replacing her identity because he basically made her a puppet to do what he wanted, but not that that was an effect of the actual weave itself.
Yeah, but her basic identity was still there. It just was under all the layers of what
exactly
compelled her to do.
And her will was fighting it, which was how she eventually, you know, was able to get away from him.
Yeah, that's how she ended up at Linny's room, because she couldn't accept it in her deep heart of hearts.
On this same topic, you know, one thought that I just had, and I just wanted to throw it out there while it was fresh in my mind, was that, you know, we mentioned earlier about how Varen had to be very careful walking, you know, this very fine line between these two sides. And the most, I think, dangerous thing that she ever did in order to help Rand or in order to help the light side was actually that act of using that, you know, form of compulsion on the captive sisters. And what just occurred to me is, as you were talking about how she had, you know, done it so carefully and so meticulously to try to make it so that it wouldn't be identified or it wouldn't be detectable, it actually was detected. We don't know exactly how or who detects it, but at one point, and I'm spacing on the Black Sister's name, I want to say that it's Elza, the one that is in Gathering Storm with Semirog. She goes to Semirog and says, I'm told to tell you that there is compulsion in my mind and that you are to remove it. And I'm wondering if that being revealed may have been what precipitated Varen knowing that she was going to be discovered and needing to go and make her confession to Egwene.
That's a good question. There's an interview question about that. I think that might kind of help along with this. The question was the compulsion which Elza told Semirog about Varen's work from after Dumai's well, and was it Shudder Harren who told her about it and to ask Semirog to remove it? And Brandon said yes.
Okay.
So what's interesting is that Shudder Harren was the one that, at least as I'm reading this question, is the one that told Elza about it and for Semirog to remove it, which is interesting that he was able to detect it.
Yeah,
see,
he can
why we
a
have
lot
to
more
keep
types
you
of
around.
Channeling and things than your typical Murdral, obviously, since he's the hand of the dark.
I'm just searching out quotes on this database. This isn't my work, for sure. This is one of the users of Theoryland, Therese. She's definitely one to thank for the work on this one. But, yeah, it's fun to... There's so many things that have been answered, and it's impossible to just remember all this stuff. I mean, before this call, I think I read through all the Baron ones, which is why that, when you brought up Elza, that just reminded me of that question that I had read, which is why I went right to it. Because, yeah, that Shadar Haran, that didn't even come to mind, or my mind, when I read the books. When I read this question, I was just like, geez, I mean, even after reading these books for so long, it's just, there's so many things that... that you can recognize the third or fourth time through. I feel like I often wonder if we're ruining that experience for a lot of people with as many answers and questions that we put out there. I just remember reading the books over and over again and just, you know, recognizing or seeing new things. And then you read the Wattfac for the first time and you're like, oh, wow, I missed all of this stuff.
Well, I don't know. Yeah,
maybe I'm guessing that a lot of people will read, you know, all of the stuff we put out there. Maybe they just don't. Maybe we're a smaller group than I'm imagining we are.
Maybe so. I think it enhanced my experience with the Wheel of Time, because I went all the way through the books probably twice before I got really involved in any, you know, internet sites or anything like that. And it was like having a set of appendices to go with it, like the Lord of the Rings, you know, has, where you've got all this additional information, and it just went, oh, that's great, now I know that, I didn't get that, or, oh, I had that, yeah, I figured that out, you know. So I think it was a positive experience. Maybe some people don't appreciate it, but then on the other hand, they don't have to listen to the podcast or go to the website.
Oh, yeah, no, that's true. Lesson. Yeah, I mean, like you said, it's probably that there are a lot of people that come onto the web once they've already gone through the books a bunch of times. I just know that I'm sure I've ruined a couple of things for people, as I've, you know, as you pointed out in the podcast. You know, I don't work that hard to hide spoilers on Theoryland, and I know a lot of people. I think even at the Jordan Con, you know, one guy ran out of the room during the opening ceremonies because I was about to say something, and we asked out in the audience, and one guy was sitting there, and I think he had only read up to book 9 or something.
Oh, geez.
And we were about to talk about Varen, this very discussion. I wanted to talk about it during the opening ceremonies, and he went running out of the room with his hands over his ears. It was quite funny.
not listening.
Yeah, I've had that. I have a few of the editors that are kind enough to volunteer to edit a lot of this information for us, that I actually have a couple of them that have said, hey, I haven't read The Gathering Storm yet, so don't give me any episodes that have spoilers. And I'm thinking, it's been, what, almost a year?
How can you not?
Well, for all of them, it's been, I'm doing a complete reread before I read it. And I'm like, okay, good for you. That's dedication. I couldn't ever do that. But, yeah.
I actually did that myself. I had Gathering Storm and went to a signing. It was out for over a month before I even started it, because I had to complete my reread first. I then, of course, read it 3 times in a row, but I had to complete my reread before I was able to do it. I felt really silly going and telling Brandon that I was really looking forward to reading it, considering it had already been out for like 3 weeks.
I don't know how you could do that, but anyway.
Let me throw this one out there.
Back to Varen, yeah.
Let me throw this one out there. How many of you think that the small detail that was revealed in books 4 through 6, that kind of that small detail quote that's been discussed out there, involves something having to do with Varen?
You know, I have to confess that sort of went right over my head. I like to think that I'm pretty up on stuff, but when I first heard about that, I went, I have no idea what that is about. And that's why I'm doing my reread again. Anyway, I'm looking forward to getting the books 4 to 6. Maybe I'll figure it out this time, because I have no clue. I'm confessing here, like Varen.
Well, it's interesting about it, and I think Luckers on Dragonmount has done a lot of work on the side, and on Theoryland, we've obsessed about it for a while. And I remember putting together this list recently, and there are so many little things that we know nothing about. It just made me realize how many little things that, you know, Robert Jordan put into the books that he just never really explained fully. And so the possible candidate list is just extremely long. And that just pointed out to me that there's so many things we're just never going to know the answers to.
Yeah.
Which is great, I think, about the world itself and what he's done. But I wondered, I mean, Brandon's brought this point that we've brought Varen in, and there's going to be this big event, and there's this small detail, and he keeps on asking, why aren't people asking more questions about Varen, or did during the tour itself? Mm. And it just made me wonder if maybe there's something about Varen within, or something that Varen's involved with in those books 4 through 6 that comes to have a big impact. Again, I don't have any great candidates to throw out to you at this moment, but I wasn't sure if that had kind of crossed anyone's mind.
No, we haven't discussed that yet, and that's probably a good topic for an upcoming podcast. The only thing I can think of is one of my favorite horses to ride, which is the other Sangreal that Lanfear mentions to Rand in the Stone of Tyr, another more powerful than Kalendor that a man can use, or there are two more powerful that were made that a man can use. One I know still exists, which I surmise was the Chodim Gal, and the other is ... and she never mentions it again, and no one else ever mentions it again. I think it might have been the thing the girls were looking for with Need when they found the Bowl of the Winds. Maybe that's what they were taken to in the storeroom in the White Tower that they couldn't get to and searched again, but that's the only thing I could come up with, and that's not related to Varen at all, so it's probably not a candidate.
The only thing that comes to mind from dealing specifically with Varen at that part of the story in that, you know, time span of book 4 through 6 is what goes on in the Two Rivers, her and Alana. And the only thought that comes to mind is that Varen mentions Perrin that he should not trust Alana. And I've always wondered what made Varen say that. What thing did Alana do or say, or what did Varen know about Alana that made her mention that to Perrin in circumspect Aes Sedai way?
That's on my list of things on here. That she says to Perrin, watch yourself with Alana. And I've always wondered why. So thank you for mentioning that, Jesse. It was on my list. I never got to it.
The other thing, and I know I've brought this up in a previous podcast, that always bothered me is who unlocked the Waygate in the Two Rivers. Because if you go through, and I've done it twice now on careful rereads to try to determine who knows, who does Perrin tell that he has relocked the Waygate? And you assume that it's either Thane or Slayer who unlocks the Waygate, but he never says it to Luke, and he has no contact, direct contact, you know, either through the White Cloaks or through to Thane directly during that whole time. The only people that he informs that the Waygate is locked are Varen and Alana and their warders. And I've tried to piece together a timeline to see if one of them could have snuck away to unlock it, and I haven't been able to do so, but that's always something that has continued to nag at me, is who unlocked the Waygate.
Doesn't Alana disappear for a while? And then she comes back after Perrin's been...
Alana disappears for 3 days. But when Loial and Gaul go to re-lock the Waygate, they're gone for over a week. So I don't think it's enough time for her to, unless she's rediscovered traveling and skimming, which hasn't happened yet in the story at that point, I don't think there's enough time for her to go and do it herself. But I've wondered if possibly one of their warders could have slipped off unnoticed to go do it.
Well, just a second. Well, how long did it take for Perrin and his group to get from the Waygate down to the Two Rivers when he showed up?
I think it takes like 4 or 5 days.
Because when Loial and it's Gaul, isn't it? Loial and Gaul when they go to seal it, to actually seal it and close it and lock it all the way, they're gone for a week, but that's because they had to sneak past Trollocs and fight their way through.
They also went on foot compared to, you know, Alana or Varen. Either one of them would have been able to go by horse, so that might shorten the trip.
Well, I'm not sure that that's enough, because an Ogier and an Aelman can both run about
that's
as fast
true.
As a horse.
That's true.
Well, I don't think I've actually thought about this in a long time, but I don't know why. When you initially asked the question, Slayer came to mind. I don't know why I thought it was him or in my head that it was. I think that's who I always believed it was that reopened the Waygate.
Yeah, it certainly would have been easy for him. And all the Forsaken would have could have learned about it by trying to send some Trollocs through that never showed up, and then.
Well, I think I believed that because didn't the Trollocs start chanting Issam, Issam, Issam?
Because
Thane also reflects, I just went through this section again, Thane also reflects that he is annoyed that Issam's Slayer didn't bring more Trollocs. So he was the one bringing them. He may have just realized because they stopped coming that the Waygate was closed, but Perrin never actually reveals to him that the Waygate's been closed.
Well, it could either be because he realized that there were no more Trollocs, that they had been caught up or something, or we know that both Theron and Thomas are dark friends, and they, as dark friends, they do have oaths that they cannot break. And every once in a while, they have to do, we know that they have to and have had to do bad things that we don't want to think of them as having done, but they had to anyway. And so there is a possibility that either of them, when they had that information, had gave it into the wrong hands.
Well, actually, Theron describes Tomas as a warder, as a dark friend who was looking for a way out, which she was able to offer him. So was he actually still a dark friend, perhaps in name only?
They still have those oaths that they cannot renege on until they're ready to die.
Yeah,
and at that point, they weren't.
I don't think, I mean, even though Tomas would not have been, you know, bound by the oath rod the way that Varen was, I don't think
he
made oaths as a dark friend that you're fed out of them very easily.
Can anyone tell me, what does the Waygate look like from within Teleronrion? If it's closed, does it appear to be closed?
I believe so. It has the leafy vines carvings on it on both sides. I believe you remove a leaf on the inside to get out, and you remove a leaf on the outside to get in.
That's how
Perrin knew that it was unlocked, is because he saw it in the wolf dream.
Right. It makes sense to me that then Issam or Slayer could have easily known that it was locked. The same way that Perrin was aware of it.
Yeah.
Was the same way
that's true.
And we know Slayer can jump in and out.
Yeah, he absolutely could have just seen it in Teleronrion.
Right.
Or he could have jumped into Teleronrion and headed up there and jumped out and checked on it. Either way.
Why didn't he just unlock it himself? I mean, he can do anything in Teleronrion that, you know, and he can be outside of Teleronrion. I mean, he can go anywhere because he does like Gwaine did when she went to Tarnal or Saladar, actually. You know, he can travel through Teleronrion to get from place to place.
Only if he's there physically, right? I mean, obviously he does also can dream into it, as we found out when he was injured.
I don't know if he has the ability to actually enter Teleronrion physically.
Well, yes,
I've
we do.
He does?
Yeah, we know.
We know he has that. For two reasons. One, we have a scene of him actually coming out of Teleronrion and killing a couple who's in bed who he assumes are random.
Oh,
men.
That's right.
Right.
Yes.
But also,
he gets shot in Teleronrion and comes out with the wound.
Also we have from interviews with Robert Jordan, we know that how he switches between Issam and Luke is when he goes in and out of Teleronrion. He can choose which face he's wearing as he passes through.
Yeah.
Okay.
But we also know, it seems apparent that he can dream in just because when he comes out that one time he's injured, he's still in the inn itself, like he was, where he'd been staying that night. And he was riding off. So, I mean, we still know he can dream in versus he also apparently in some way, I don't think we have been told exactly how he does it, but we know he can enter as a physical body. We don't know if he's using something or if that's just a special gift he's been given. We haven't really, it hasn't been revealed, and I believe that that's going to come into play. I mean, I wonder, you know, when it goes back to that small detail, it's off of Varen, but I wonder if Slayer is involved there. One of the ideas I had, though, for Varen was, why was Varen really in the Two Rivers? If we now, with everything we know about Varen, do we hold her reasoning that she gave Perrin suspect now, and was she there for a different purpose?
Well, she certainly could have been there on orders, you know, having nothing to do with what she did or didn't want to do, but she seems to have a remarkable amount of, you know, self-determination and flexibility for one who's of the Black Ozma.
Well, I mean, I was always suspect of that. I mean, going and looking for girls that, you know, going to the Two Rivers to simply get to find out if there are more there to be taught, with everything going on and with all these plans, like you said, you're bringing the Black Ozma, maybe she was sent there. That's very possible. I've always been suspect about Alana bonding Rand and whether or not there was some compulsion there used from Varen for Alana to bond him.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of, she suggested to Alana, however you pronounce it. But I don't know, that kind of, all to me, everything that Varen did, now you have to kind of say to yourself, you know, really, why was she doing it? Because anything she said very well.
Could it be possible just that because Varen was one of the only Aes Sedai that really paid very close attention to Thane's scribbling on the walls of the dungeon and the dark prophecy that was scribbled there. I personally think that's why she, you know, went and tried to follow them, knew that they were going towards Tommenhead. But I wonder if she maybe put it together that since what had happened at Falm had happened, that Thane's next place to go would be the Two Rivers, and went to the Two Rivers knowing that once Thane started doing what he was going to do, that would draw, if not Rand, at least, you know, she may have thought it was going to draw Rand, but...
Yeah.
May have gone there in the anticipation that Thane was going to go there and draw either one or all of the boys back to the Two Rivers.
That's interesting. I mean, Thane is a concern of the Dark One. I mean, you know, you kind of do wonder if he continued to be a concern and was if the Black Aja sent some people to, you know, follow Thane or try to be aware of what he was up to since they couldn't capture him.
Well, you know, I don't think it's a coincidence that when Varen and Alana show up, and Varen, a known Dark Friend, that Slayer shows up too. And I've always kind of wondered why Slayer was there. And it could be like Jesse was saying that, you know, they figured that what Thane was doing in the Two Rivers would draw one or more of the boys there, and so they wanted to knock them off. But it could also be that Slayer was there to try and get rid of Thane, and that would not surprise me at all if the Dark One employed him to that use. But
that's what I've always assumed, is that Slayer was sent after Thane as an assassin to deal with Thane, since Thane had essentially gone rogue from the Dark One at that point.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was a renegade.
And you know, following that reasoning, I don't believe that Varen and Slayer are both in the Two Rivers accidentally. I think that from some order, and from some place or another, she was ordered to be there, whether by the upper echelons of the Dark Society or by from the Amarlin or the Hall or whomever. I don't think that, obviously she wanted to be there, otherwise she would have found a way to not be there, but I think that she can hide behind either of those orders before she has to reveal her own personal motivation.
Well, and why do you think when they were in Shinar that she chose to reveal her speculations regarding the three boys to Moraine and Swan at that time? Was she doing that because she wanted to be involved in it, or was that under orders? I mean, she could have sat there and hidden in the shadows with her speculations and just done whatever she wanted to do, but she insinuated herself right smack in the middle of the whole thing by saying, and of course, the man who channels must be one of the three boys with you, Moraine.
Yeah, quite honestly, I think at that point that was Varen being Varen. I don't think that was Varen being a Dark Friend. I don't think that was Varen being a Light Friend. I think that was Varen being Varen.
I agree.
I do too, yeah.
Yeah.
I think that Varen had pieced together enough information to know that the dragon had actually been reborn and just wanted to, you know, kind of weasel her way in and be involved in whatever was going to happen.
And honestly, I think at this point, I think that Varen trusted Suan Sanche and Moraine, both of them. Whether or not it's because Suan, in fact, I think in spite of the fact that Suan was Amarlin, I think is she trusted them both. And that's why she insinuated herself in with them to try and help them lead these three boys.
Yeah, it also, because she trusted Suan, maybe another reason why she was more willing or more ready to trust Egwene, because she, you know, it was a not very well kept secret that Suan was, you know, really assisting Egwene in training her to become a good Amarlin. So that may have helped her to, you know, eventually lead her to trust Egwene as well.
Kind of going back to what we were talking about earlier, did we really thought on why Varen warned Perrin about Alana? Because I always thought that was odd. I sort of assumed that it was because Alana was, especially in light of, you know, Varen's confession to Egwene and the book, but I was had it in the back of my mind that Varen suspected Alana possibly of being a Dark Friend, and that's why she wanted to make sure that the boys were warned, although she never got to Rand to warn him.
When was it that she warned them? Do you guys recall?
When they were in the Two Rivers. She kind of, as an aside to Perrin, she swapped herself with Alana Perrin.
I believe it was shortly after, well, Perrin shows up in the Two Rivers. He talked to some people, Madame Alvear, what's her first name?
Marin.
Egwene's mother.
Marin or Marin.
Marin Alvear takes him to see the two Aes Sedai and their warders, and they have a nice little chat, and then on his way out, Varen kind of catches him when no one is around and just gives him the little watch yourself with Alana. And you know, I don't know.
Is Alana for sure not Black Aja?
No.
No, we don't know. It wasn't said.
There's no for sure. I'm tending to side on the side of not. I don't really have any proof for it, but I just tend more to the not so much side. Here's a crazy theory. Oh, well, never mind. Go ahead, Andrew.
Though I also don't really have any evidence, I do come down on the side of thinking that Alana's not. The only reason for that is that I think Egwene knows that Alana is somehow connected to Rand. I don't remember if that's completely correct. I might be very wrong about that. But if she knows that Alana is connected to Rand and her name came up in the book, somehow, I don't know. I mean, I think there would be something in the text of the Gathering Storm that would indicate, oh, Rand's in more danger than we thought.
I can't think of a place where Egwene does know that Alana is somehow connected to Rand.
I'm not sure. For some reason, it seems like enough people know that, you know, it would just be a little odd somehow for Egwene not to. And like I said, it might just be my wishful thinking that, you know, people are more well-informed than they tend to be in these series.
Well, I think she was gone. She was gone from among the Aiel when Cad Swain and everybody found out about it, and Amnes and Soralia found out about it. I believe she was. Well, maybe not. There might have been some overlap there.
I don't think that Egwene. I can't remember anything that would indicate that Egwene does know that Alana.
No, I don't think so. I don't remember. Yeah.
Well, let me throw this out there. I mean, do we have? We know about all the. I mean, as far as I can tell. It seems odd that plot, if Alana had been told to do that from somebody, that it would have been mentioned by this point in the books. I mean, the idea that Alana decided to bond Rand is always, it's always felt wrong, you know, ever since it happened. And the idea that there's nothing behind it except for Alana's just desire to help, you know, the idea that it could be posited that somehow Rand needed it and his tavernist made her do it or something. I mean, you could go along those lines, but the idea that she would just randomly bond Rand because she's upset about her warder, it seems like such a break in, I don't know, it's always seemed so suspect to me that it has absolutely no purpose beyond Alana just randomly decided to do this one act that will not come to play in the books.
Well, the only thing that kind of makes me wonder about that is that she does make a comment in The Two Rivers that, as I recall, something to the effect that all those Tavarin should have strings tied to them. And I think she jokes that she's not so far gone as to bond a man without permission. I'm not so far gone as that. But then she does just that later with Rand, but she doesn't with Perrin.
Yeah, you know, but it's not even with, I mean, you'd think you'd want authorization to do something. I don't know.
I know.
Is she not a sitter? It's not like she... It's such a random act to do with such an important character in the book. I mean, it is within the 4 to 6 range. You know, the Alana bonding thing has been discussed. It hasn't been discussed ad nauseum because no one seems to... It just kind of fell off the radar, right? Rand is aware of it, but does it ever come into play, ever in the books? Is there ever a point where we say where it actually keeps Rand alive? Or I'm trying to recall a time where it's anything more than just that one moment, and then Rand knows where she is, you know, and she's always...
Well,
to cause an annoyance to him.
There's a couple of times, one when she leads Katswane to him in Farmadding, which ends up helping him out when he gets thrown in the brig in the dungeons beneath their city, and Katswane's there to bail him out. Yeah, and then there's also the moment in Knife of Dreams when Rand travels to Tyr and she goes and finds Darlin so that Rand can go and find Darlin quite easily. And beyond that, I don't know of any time that it's actually been used or useful.
Well, it wasn't really used intentionally, but it was actually directly responsible for him ending up being captured by the Reds, because I believe he fled to Carrion in order to avoid Alana, pretty much. Couldn't stand having her in his head all the time, and so he went as far away as he could, and then he ended up doing the dumb thing and letting the Aes Sedai into the audience room with all their chests.
I would be surprised if it comes to play. I mean, I thought it might be something more important until he was bonded, until he now has four women in his head, you know, until it became less unique than it was at the time. But it's one of those little details that, you know, that we've never really understood why it happened. And it's never, no one's ever said, oh yeah, I remember we told Alana to do this. It was never a plan coming out of the White Tower. Even Varen, while I like to think that she was involved, she kind of talks about it afterwards, like, what can we do with this now that we have it? You know,
yeah.
And it's always kind of blamed on her emotional state of the time. And then it's kind of, and then just Rand just deals with it. But anyway, it's one of those moments where you're kind of like, and Varen's involved, kind of. But it never, nothing ever really comes of it. Like you said, they know where they are. She's able to find them a couple times. Maybe it can be said that, you know, he obviously fed off of that, and maybe all of his physical injuries, maybe it did help with those and his ability to withstand, you know, as Alana discusses all the time, the pain that he's experiencing. So that could be, I mean, I guess somebody could say, well, that was instrumental and that was necessary.
I think the big thing that could come into play is that she can always find him. So if she's being run by the dark, you know, she's a Black Aja, he has one big string to them. He can't hide from her very well.
Yeah, there's that whole theory where, you know, people believe that, you know, Matt's eye, and somehow he's always the dark one, can, you know, see through it, or, you know, lots of loony theories come my way. But in that same way, it's kind of funny that exact thing in essence has happened to Rand. You know, whoever is running Alana, if there is somebody that's in charge, they always know where, or can always find Rand.
Well, here's an interesting idea. What if Rand ends up having to Balefire Alana, and then he'll know what it feels like to be Balefired?
when am I supposed to announce these loony theories? Next month? Is that what you're saying?
Oh, my God. Yeah.
I don't know.
You know what? I got to say that Balefire, I'm going to do a little crossover here, but Balefire is a little bit like Captain Janeway talked about time travel. It just gives me a headache.
For me, the Alana thing has only really ever added to the general, like, portrait of Rand of, here, have another egg to juggle. Because
right.
It's like, here's one more person who can die and royally mess you up.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, you know, other than that, yeah, I mean, I want to say that there is at least one other point where she did something that was helpful to him, but at the same time, I want to say it was at his request. Like, he was like, can you go here and do this so that you're of some use? Because, you know, really, honestly, yes, I understand him being bitter at her for bonding him against his will, but at the same time, Rand's a real jerk to her a lot.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, and it's like, wow, yeah.
Well, other than finding
him.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
It's like, you know, he has this rule about women and certain ways to act, and she's the exception to it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
I think
that whole, can you imagine sharing your emotional state and physical location with somebody that simply took that information from you, and there's nothing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I think I understand why he's that way. I mean, you're right. After a time, you'd think that it would lessen a little bit, but maybe there's that constant intrusion that he feels in his life and in his mind, where there already are all sorts of voices and people, that it's just, he can't believe that there's this one that actually, you know, just came to him and made it happen without, you know. I think he's just so, I don't know if any of us could get over that type of thing happening.
I wouldn't. It would really bother me. But to me, the biggest danger that she represents to him now, other than being able to track him to a certain extent, is that anyone who knows about it can kill her and send him off into the Warder rage, the death wish.
They could.
I don't know if the other bonds will insulate him against that. There's no real history to let us know.
You know, I think, though, that we can kind of look to what happened to Lon to judge how that will work out, because when Moraine died, Lon immediately had another bond that kind of subverted his death wish, his going crazy, because Mae Aes Sedai is dead, whatever psychological trauma you want to name it. And so I think the fact that if Alana dies, he will not only have the other three in his head, but also Min will be right there, depending. I don't think it would take too much for Elaine to suddenly up and run away from whatever it is she's doing at the time and, you know, get out of her bath or stop trying on her dresses or whatever and go see what's wrong with Rand.
The only good bath scene is one with where Avienda's there. But, yeah, what's interesting about that, well, if you go back to that whole point, I think someone brought this up, that we've talked about this a couple of times, Varen said that Perrin, you know, maybe shouldn't trust Alana. And Jordan does this all the time, right? I mean, if you recall, Egwene thought to herself, maybe Varen is Black Aja. And then she doesn't broach that subject again for, let's say, 9 books. I mean, you look at some the type of information that Jordan kind of, he throws out kind of an observation a character makes about another character, and then he says absolutely nothing about that observation, and it often comes to, it often comes true, you know, and he likes to kind of drop those in. Now, all the time it doesn't, you know, he likes to do that too. He likes to throw an observation that turns out to be wrong. So not that that much can be read into it, but it is interesting that he had Varen, who now we've come to learn, you know, has been studying the Black Aja, you know, for so long, and was suspect of Alana or her, for some reason was suspect of her. And then that we doesn't get mentioned again, and Alana kind of doesn't play a huge role that much, and it kind of makes me wonder if something will come back in these last two books having to do with that moment. I mean, I know we've kind of gone far afield from Varen, but Varen's kind of a little bit tied to it.
Yeah, well, Varen said that she told Egwene, she said she's got in her book names, locations, explanations, everything I learned about them, the majority of the Black Aja. She said, I'm looking at it. I doubt I caught them all, Varen said, smiling, but I think I got the large majority of them. And I promise you, Egwene, I can be quite thorough, but she didn't get all of them. Now, Egwene uncovered a couple of others during the purge, the cleansing, or whatever you would call her, but that doesn't necessarily mean she got all of them either. And the other thing, that this is another one of my favorite horses, is, and it only relates to Varen because of her expose of the Blacks, is that we've heard time and time again about how 13 Murdral and 13 Dreadlords or Black Aja can be used to turn a channeler to the Dark One against their will. Well, maybe there are still enough Blacks to overwhelm Elaine in the White Tower and try to turn her. You know, so many things in Egwene's last accepted test have come true. You know, her being the Amelin seed, et cetera, et cetera. Maybe that's one of them.
Yeah.
Because Varen didn't say she caught them all.
That has to come to play at some point in this book. I mean, we're all waiting for it. It's kind of one of those that we just have to see once.
I thought it was Sherium. That's who I thought it was going to be, or possibly Loghain, but I was sure it was Sherium.
Well, if we don't get that whole turning to the Dark One, or at least we're not told that somebody was, I'll feel gypped. You know, I feel like we didn't get something. I want to see that moment. You know, I want to see that.
Yeah.
I want to know that that's been used, because it's kind of one of those things. It's like being told about Balefire and for 14 books, never seeing it once used, you know.
Well, that's what Brandon calls narrative debt, you know. And they owe us.
I feel like they do. For this one issue, for me, it's like, I want to know whether or not it was Taim, whether or not it was, you know, I want to know that it was used, or that, you know, we see an instance where, I'll throw out kind of a crazy theory, which is, you know, if Alana was being tortured, would Rand go to her rescue?
Ooh,
you know,
depending on what he was doing.
Yeah, well, you know what I mean? Like, if he felt Alana, you know, was taken, he'd be able to sense what was going on, I'm assuming. And could that be some use that they tried to, you know, use Alana to get him. But anyway, it's my loony theory for the day.
I don't know if he would, especially if he was far enough away, because don't the Aiel beat her or something, and they determine that, you know, they can do that and it won't hurt him?
Yeah,
isn't there something about that? I mean, granted, it's, you know, probably a little bit short of torture, but, you know, they're Aiel, maybe not that much. So I don't know if he actually would, if he would be able to really sense that if he was far enough away.
Oh, I like that question. That one's coming up at DragonCon, I'll tell you that. It's similar to the Balefire question. It'll be, is there a distance to pain ratio that is, you know, that can somehow be sensed through the water bond? Because I wonder what degree a pain that gets transferred along, you know, if you're beat versus if you're cut, you know, if you're sliced open, you know, I feel like Semiraj could probably, I feel like she could probably cause enough pain to for that distance to be, you know, 1,000 miles and you'd still sense it or something, you know, I think it's a fun one to pose to him. I think Brandon will, I think he'll laugh and appreciate that one. Who knows, we'll get an answer, but I feel like we have to ask that one now.
Yeah, no, I love that. Thank you, Jesse, because that was actually in the back of my mind, too. But, yeah, there definitely is a limit. I mean, it definitely says several times that if she's far enough away, the feelings are really muted to the point where he couldn't tell, you know, that they were beating her, that she just seemed like she was uncomfortable or unhappy or something. I love the way the Aiel jumped right on that, too. Oh, okay. Well, we were afraid to beat her because it would hurt the Karakarn. Oh, Lana's going to be in for some tough times. Pretty funny. So back to Varen. I don't know. What have we missed on Varen? You have any other pet theories that we haven't touched on yet?
My pet theories, Varen, I think I've shared all my pet theories on Varen itself. Those are my two, Alana and Lanfear, as it relates to Varen will always, those are mine. I don't really have any, I'm trying to think if I've heard any. I mean, obviously a lot of them are wrong now. I mean, because of the Gathering Storm, a lot of the pet theories people had about a Varen, you know, the whole Purple Aja issue and her being, her lying or not, all those things are kind of, you know, at this point, they've gone away. So
yes, I was, for a long time, I was really of the opinion that she was sort of a super light friend, you know, maybe like Shadar Haran, a direct agent of the light, you know, rather than just a mere Aes Sedai, and that was why that she could get away with some of the things that she did, but that's been pretty much laid to rest now, along with her. So, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was just saying, my final kind of thought on Varen is just the statement she makes, and I know I've harkened back to, I used the word harken, that's awesome. I've gone back to this point a couple times. She says to Egwene, I only know that this battle isn't being fought the way that Althor assumes it will be. I mean, that feels like a message from Robert Jordan to the reader, you know? Like, that feels like one of those moments where he's telling us, like, everything you've assumed, that Rand's assumed, of what Ishmael was saying, I think that was brought up, which I thought was an excellent point, that Ishmael's put on the table, and here's Varen, this person that studied it all, and she's telling us, hey, you're probably wrong at how you assume this is all going to come out. And that, it's kind of an exciting thing to me, and also from being a theorist, you know, caring about discussing these books, it makes me, it kind of digs in and says, you know, what are we missing? You know, what are we as all assuming at this point? And what's Rand assuming that we're wrong about how the last battle is going to come about? I think we all, I mean, in my mind, I see this huge battle, you know, like good versus evil. They finally have this huge battle. And I think we're all kind of thinking something, at least in my mind, thinking something akin to what we hear about Luz Theron with the 100 companions and dropping into Shalgo and sealing the Dark One. And all of this, I mean, but I get this feeling like, oh shoot, maybe we're wrong. Maybe Varen's trying to, and maybe Robert Jordan, and you know, maybe we're being told as readers, hey, this is somebody who's been studying this much longer than you have readers have been studying this and knows much more than you know, and she thinks that maybe you have some assumptions that are wrong, and you know what I mean. I kind of get that feeling from from what Varen's saying there, and it leaves me with that open question of, you know, what are we all kind of assuming that, you know, that's going to turn out to be a complete surprise to us?
Well, what do we really think that Rand is expecting? I mean, obviously there's an element of the, you know, arms and armor, whatever, the physical soldiers battling with swords and so forth and so on and horse, you know. But what else is Rand actually expecting? I mean, he's already battled who he thought was the Dark One, Ishamiel of Balzamon, in the skies over Falme. You know, he had a sort of metaphysical confrontation more than once in Teleron Riad with Ravin and others of the Forsaken. Is it going to be something beyond even that?
That's a good question.
I mean, you know, what is Rand actually expecting himself? I mean, he keeps saying, oh, if you could just drag me to Shael Ghul now when I've got this blood, you know, that would end it, my blood on the rocks. You know, but is he actually expecting to just go striding up to Shael Ghul, knock on the door and say, here I am, let's have it in, you know, let's have the fight?
Well, you know, it could be, you know, you talk about all these other times when he's fought against all these other Forsaken, and each and every time it was a very physical confrontation, whereas, I mean, even in the ones that seem like they're more magical or more metaphysical, as you put it, still, they're very physical things, whereas the fight against the Dark One cannot be a physical fight. There is no way that Rand or anyone else on that earth physically can defeat the Dark One. It has to be a battle not only of wills, but of belief. They have to believe that they can, and I'm trying to find the right way to phrase this, but it's not so much as belief as it is faith, that the Dark One is not this all oppressive power that he has been, is not this all oppressive power that we have seen him as, that we have seen him as in these books. And so I honestly believe that as much as we're going to see these epic battles and epic showdowns on a physical nature, but those are not going to be the things that are going to, at the end, push the Dark One out of the way and reseal the boar. Whatever it is that it takes, it's not what anyone has been expecting.
Well, if that's true, I think one thing that we definitely learned in Gathering Storm is that Rand's epiphany is going to make the chances of him winning a lot greater, because he was becoming so dark that it would have been like the Heradol against the Shadow thing. He was becoming so dark, I don't think he would have had a chance of defeating the Dark One, because he was getting too almost corrupted by it himself, and I think his chances are a lot better. But if what you're saying is true, and if it's going to be on a different plane, maybe the way for him to win that is to just, you know, is he going to do like a Daniel Jackson and ascend to a higher plane and become a different being himself and basically not be involved in it? Is his absence going to create some sort of a more metaphysical conflict that will be done on some other plane of existence altogether? I mean, that doesn't seem possible, because we have all these images of the three girls mourning over his body and his body on the bier and all these things, but I'm just trying to think of how can he confront the Dark One in a way that Rand or none of us is expecting? I'm at a loss, and that's probably why I'm not a world famous writer like Brandon or Robert Jordan.
Well, what's great is Baron's at a loss too. So,
I'm having this little mental image right now as you guys are talking about this, of Rand sitting, like, you know, kneeling in front of the mountain of Shael Ghul, and he's fighting the Dark One in his head, and he gets a nosebleed, and that's his blood on the rocks of Shael Ghul. which sounds really anticlimactic, but
Well, Robert Jordan is famous for anticlimactic endings. I mean, look at the look at the death of Aram, and look at the who was the other one we were just talking about in the last podcast? It's right in the top of my head. I can't think of it. You know, the whole thing is wrapped up. Oh, Grendel. You know, here's this big epic battle. Grendel, da da da. She's dead in 2 paragraphs. Semirag, big epic, long, 20 books. Blah blah blah. She's dead in 2 paragraphs.
Well, I mean, I remember, if I remember the quote right, I think Robert Jordan believed that it would take at least one full book for the last battle itself. And if I'm not mistaken, Brandon has talked about the Towers of Midnight, that all of the main, I hope this isn't a spoiler, all of the main storylines will come together by the end of the book. And that my Memory of Light, as far as I understand, again, this could totally be wrong, but I think A Memory of Light is going to be almost an entire book devoted to this, to the end, in essence. And so, I mean, I imagine there has to be some, I think you brought it up, some armor and whatever the phrase you used, Virginia, was.
Armor. Like, I don't know. One of the boys told me, and I've forgotten it now.
Some. You know, fighting with, I mean, I can't believe we wouldn't have something like that with Lan going up and gathering his armies, and there's going to be that component. But I do kind of wonder how much it's going to reflect or, you know, mirror the Eye of the World, where
yeah.
there's a battle raging, but the real battle is occurring between Rand. But again, I can't tell if I'd enjoy that, you know. It certainly can't be Rand against Ishmael again. That can't be the end. You know, we can't see the fourth same battle happen in just a different way. So, I mean, there obviously are some things that we have a belief that are going to occur, the sealing of the prison somehow, or the boar. And so it feels like something has to happen where Rand has to attack in some way. So, I can't tell. Maybe it is going to be, you know, same thing we kind of all expect. He's just going to go up there and it's going to happen.
Well,
or maybe it is like... Because Fel, right? Fel comes in here, and I like the idea brought up about belief, right? There's no belief in order to give strength, have to clear the rubble
mm-hmm.
before you can build concept.
Well,
you know.
But, you know, kind of the idea I had, and it's an interesting one. I don't know if any of you have seen. It's an old Hallmark movie, it's or actually TV series, but every time I've seen it, it's been a complete movie. But it's Merlin. And I don't know how much it follows actual Arthurian legend, but in the end, the way that it has epic battles and all that, but in the end, the way that they defeat Mab is to turn their back and forget about her. And
mm-hmm.
I can just see that being the way to defeat the Dark One is just not let him have this power, no longer give him this power over the world. And that way, they defeat him. And I'm not sure what it would take to do that, but
that's interesting. I mean, you bring up a good point. I really like that Varin, she thought she could do the most damage by finding all these people and then giving Egwene the ability to get rid of them. And I wonder if getting rid of the Dark One is just getting rid of his influence in such a way where Rand somehow kind of that. I'm trying to think if I saw this theory actually posted. I don't want to make it sound like it's my idea, that maybe somehow he's able to destroy all dark friends in the world. You know, anyone
mm-hmm.
linked to the Dark One, he's somehow able to, you know, destroy them all. And in doing so, destroys the Dark One's influence and then is able to seal the boar because the Dark One no longer has the power and influence he does in the world. I don't know. Anyway.
Okay.
When you were saying that, Spencer, I had this sudden image of which one of you thought of the Marshmallow Man? You know?
Yeah. Well, I have to know really quick. Is anyone here tonight? Do they read Jim Butcher's The Dresden Files?
No, I haven't.
No.
I saw the TV show.
Oh no! Don't read the books. The TV show. Okay. Well, then I'm not going to go any further into that. But. Okay, you just reminded me of something from one of the more recent books, which is so recent that I think if I said anything more, it'd be a spoiler. So I'm just going to shut up now.
No, but I mean, I think there is that concept. I, if I'm remembering correctly, the reason why this idea came to me when you said that was somebody brought up the fact that Rand used a weave in a Stone of Tyr to destroy all the Trollocs
yeah.
together.
Yeah,
and the idea I think that was pushed was that somehow that could be used at a greater scale than that.
Well,
But anyway, so that was.
But we've already done that. Yeah, but we've already done that, sort of.
Yeah,
so,
you're right. I mean, it would be a much grander scale, of course.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I don't know. My crazy theory is basically based on mostly on a viewing of Mins that she saw Rand and another man merging together, and one lived and one died. Originally, I thought that was Luz Theron, but Luz Theron is sort of now out of the picture after the experience on Dragonmount. So my crazy theory has evolved into Rand will merge with Moradin, and between the two of them, they will become one sort of super being, and the battle will basically then be with that merged person, to whether it will become good or evil, whether that merging of the two, basically Moradin Ishamael and Rand, Moradin slash Ishamael and Rand, will be good or evil and be able to contain the Dark One that way by turning away from him, by turning the Light's champion to the Shadow or the Shadow's champion to the Light. One of the other of the deities would be diminished to the point where it would be considered a victory. Until the next time.
It is interesting. I wonder why they didn't seal the boar right after it was made.
Yeah.
I don't know. Your question brought this up in my head, but I'm sitting here going like, you know, it would have been a lot easier if they had just come up with a plan to, you know, if Luz Theron's plan had come much earlier. I mean, it feels to me like it would have been an easier thing to do. Because it seems like it took a long time. It was over time. Maybe they just didn't believe it was that dangerous. I don't know. Maybe they didn't know.
According to the strike at Sheol Ghul, there was a lot of political maneuvering involved in that. What was her name? Latra Posey or whatever was on the side of using the Chodan Kal to seal it, whereas Luz Theron wanted to take men and women. He wanted to take male and female Aes Sedai to seal the boar, but Latra Posey basically turned all the female Aes Sedai against that idea and made them all swear not to participate. So he had to do it with only men, which is why it didn't work fully, and the backblast tainted the male half of the source, as I recall.
That was 110 years after. I mean, it wasn't, you know, it took a long time to get to that point. I'm just wondering why they just didn't do it immediately. I mean, it seems like
I had an interesting thought. Obviously, okay, if Luz Theron takes the 100 companions and use Sidhim to seal the boar, thus making the 7 seals that are the focus for sealing the boar, why are the seals half white and half black?
I actually think the seals were created
beforehand
in advance with both of them, and that the placing of them also required the power, and it's that they didn't actually get to because they didn't have the women. So the seals were made before, but they weren't implemented. And if they had been implemented using both Sidhim and Vidar, then it had a chance to work.
But that was the ancient symbol of the Aes Sedai, the entire symbol, not just the one or the other.
Yeah.
Back then,
but
so it would have made sense that they would.
As I was thinking about that, it was like, wait a minute.
I think it was like a marketing branding thing. That's what I'm guessing.
And that's probably why it took them 110 years to resolve it, because they not only had the political wrangling to get through, but the merchandising aspect of it.
That's probably true. Yeah, exactly.
I think it's going to be the best.
Yeah, we had some licensing problems there.
Yeah. Yeah, my favorite's going to be when we find out that actually, you know, in the Age of Legends, the black half of the symbol represented the female channelers.
Mm.
Mark that one down.
Well, what I want to know, and I think one of the number one questions I would ask Varen if I could speak with her, would be, I know that the breaking was chaotic, and I know that the Aes Sedai were in turmoil after the breaking and all of the men were killed and everything, but can you somebody please explain to me how they just woke up one day and forgot how to travel and managed to lose the seals? I mean, these were kind of important things, and if there were any Aes Sedai left alive, you would think that some of them would remember these really fairly common weaves in the Age of Legend, traveling, you know, making Quendiar. Oh, they just forgot? I never have understood that.
Well,
I have to ask Brandon that. If a giant earthquake destroys LA, I am not going to forget how to drive my car.
Yeah, Yeah, but if giant earthquakes destroyed the entire continent that we live on over the course of 100 and however many years, you might forget how to drive a car.
Nah.
I don't think you can take away the 110.
Especially if all the people who know how to drive the cars are killed in the earthquakes or killed trying to save others from the earthquakes, and all those people are left are those who don't know how to drive a car.
Yeah. Nope. Not buying it. Sorry. The Isobars are great ones for passing on knowledge and maintaining their knowledge and everything like that. I can't see that if there was one left alive that they would have not passed on whatever they knew.
Yeah, well, we're assuming that traveling was an important thing for them at that point. I mean, in the Age of Legends, they probably had open gateways tied to Tarangreal everywhere. And we're kind of going on what would be important to Rand's group, surely traveling. But to them, we're assuming that all these people that weren't interested in war, that learning that specific weave would have been an important skill and talent to those people at the time, which I don't think that necessarily is the case. I mean, I think it might have been, but as far as I can tell, when we're told that the Finns have great stores of Angreal and Tarangreal and such, I think a lot of the Age of Legends were a lot of people taking weaves and going, I don't want to do this anymore. I just want something that does it for me. And
yeah.
So, I mean, a lot of these type of things, we can't assume that every single Aes Sedai knew every single weave, nor that they found them that important. So while I do understand what you're saying in the sense that surely somebody remembered and somebody passed it down to somebody else and surely somebody was left alive, there's an assumption there on our part of what they would have had knowledge of and thought was important and could have taught to somebody else.
Well, I guess my only thing that I can fall back on is when Rand was going through the array, the mirrored array in Meridian, and saw, you know, the Ben Aiel and his ancestors and so forth and so on. And one of them, and I cannot remember the name of the fellow, thought, you know, about how he was going to get married and he was going to go someplace. And he said he might take a showing, but usually he would just travel with an Aes Sedai when he needed to go visit another city. So I kind of got the impression it was pretty common, but, you know, I'm basing everything on that one vision, you know,
sure,
of his past.
Well,
so
you also have to remember, though, one of the Forsaken, you know, the supposed masters of the age, the ancient evil, he didn't know how to travel just because he didn't feel like it. And I think we
who
have to remember
that. Who didn't know how to,
that, that like Matt was saying, these people, you know, if they didn't want to learn a skill, then they didn't learn it. And those people who did learn it, honestly, I have to assume that during the breaking, those people who had the knowledge of how to do these things were the ones who were the more powerful, who could do them. And because of that power, or because they had that power, they felt inclined to help where they could and to do what they could to help try and stop the breaking or what have you. And they overexerted themselves or whatever, and they all got themselves killed trying to be heroes. That's how I justify it.
I don't think any of us are going to be able to convince Regina. I think you should ask Brandon that question. That's what I always tell people. I would like to put a challenge out to the people that listen to your podcast, if you don't mind me.
Go right ahead.
You know, as we've been talking about Varen this entire time, and we've kind of brought up all these things that, you know, all these other theories, I want to see a theory as to, you know, as it pertains to when Varen says, I only know this battle isn't being fought the way that Althor assumes it will be, and when she says, I'm not certain he understands how the Great Lord works. I want to hear a theory about how the last battle is actually going to happen that isn't how we all expect it to happen. Or, you know, I want to know, we have a memory of light coming up, obviously, after the Towers of Midnight? So, you know, what is that last book, what's that last battle going to look like, and what's going to be the surprising thing how it's going to end that we're not all expecting? Send me a theory. I'd love to put something up that really, and when I say send me a theory, I always tell people this, and I think of speculation as three paragraphs. You know, send me something that, you know, you feel like you want torn apart and handed back to you. We love those kind of theories. So put as much work as you can into it. I mean, I'd love to post something, and, you know, on the homepage of Theoryland. So send me your ideas at tamarillin@theoryland.com. Of course, it doesn't have to be that one. I'm always I'm most anxious to get a good theory to replace what's on the homepage. And lots of times I just get a couple of paragraphs or an idea that somebody hasn't really sat down and spent a lot of time putting together. So give me something I can post. I'd love to get some new ideas out there. A lot of us old timers, you know, we think we know it all. And sometimes we do, but lots of the times we don't. And so I'd love to get a new idea or a new take on an old idea and put it up on Theoryland. So send me what you got.
Well, I actually got bumped off for a second, so you might have already just said this, but we hope that you can come back on periodically, you know, and talk about something with us. And we would actually also mind if you run across something you think is interesting, you know, send us something for, you know, I would like to reinstitute the Ben's crazy theory, although it won't be Ben's anymore because he's not with us anymore. But, you know, I sort of love to do that. And that's one of the things we have to do is find some crazy theories.
Well, so certainly I'd like to do both of those. I mean, I've been happy. Like I said, transmigration, hands down, one of my favorite topics. As that also pertains to Teleron Riad, Unseen World, there's lots of stuff I like to talk about with the ways and how it's part of what I think is the unseen world and a separate layer within Teleron Riad proper versus Teleron Riad. Oh, anyways, we have lots of fun little ways we talk about the gap of infinity and all these fun concepts as it pertains to Teleron Riad. So if it's Teleron Riad, if it's Lanfear, if it's, you know, transmigration, the Finns, definitely bring me on. I'd love to be there. You know, there's other topics, and feel free to contact me. I'll just tell you I'm not a great person to talk about them because I just haven't focused on them. So, like, for example, Horn of Valir, not me.
Well, here's a Lanfear question for you, Ben, which just popped into my head. Do you think we'll actually see Lanfear as Lanfear again, no longer Sindane?
Okay, can I rant just for a moment about Lanfear?
Absolutely.
It's one of the saddest things. Yeah, I wish, you know, that she hadn't been destroyed and made into Sindane. She was always my favorite character and always kind of the wild, you know, to me she was what I guess Thane is. She was like this character that you just didn't know what was going to happen. She was going to spoil things. And I really, after she came back as Sindane, I've been depressed. And I'm hoping upon all hopes that somehow Lanfear comes back, somehow gets out of the mind trap. I don't know. To me, it's the mind trap. And if you can get rid of it, we get Lanfear again. And so I'm all for somehow destroying that mind trap and somehow she comes out of it alive. I've always, my pet theory when it comes to Lanfear is she made the boar. To me, there's a nice mirroring effect that she would have some way to help Rand in some way to close it, because she would know that if the Dark One is no longer free, she would be freed to kind of do her thing. So to me, it kind of fits that she would be interested in that, especially at this point, as she's been taken captive in essence by the Dark One. So, but I've been saddened that it feels like there's been a huge loss of her character for the last, you know, six or seven books. And I'm really hoping that I'm really hoping the end of Lanfear was not walking, you know, falling through that gate, the doorway with Moraine.
Okay, well, here's the other side of that coin, and I'm sorry, I'm kind of overriding everybody else here and being piggy with time, but I would like the same thing for Viren. I know, being a dark friend who is a pretty, you know, traitorous dark friend, that the Dark One is not going to bring her back to Hunsmore by her, but I wonder if there's exceptions to everything, the Creator doesn't interfere, but maybe there's some way that she could come back to us. I would really love that. I mean, we haven't been without her for books after books, but I already miss her. You think that's possible?
Well, I mean, anything's possible with transmigration. Well, not any, but lots of things are.
Well, I'm sure if the Dark One has that ability, the Creator must as well.
Oh, that would be. Well, we're told it's, supposedly he doesn't interfere. I don't know how correct that is. Again, it's interesting. I asked Brandon a lot of questions about the Dark One and the Creator, and a lot of people didn't like my questions because they were all Rafo questions, and I even told Brandon, you'll probably Rafo this when I ask you this.
Did you get a Rafo card?
Oh, no, there were so many. they were all Rafo questions. My questions all...
I didn't get one. I was kind of disappointed I didn't get one when I gave him a Rafo, but oh well.
They were all along the lines of, can the Creator channel, can he use the true power, you know, can the Dark One use the One Power? And it was all kind of these, you know, mythological, metaphysical kind of questions about. And they were all raffled. And his point was Robert Jordan didn't like to talk about things that people within the story or within the book themselves couldn't know for some reason, or, you know, wasn't something passed down to them. So this idea that the creator, you know, again, whether or not the creator can get involved or whatever, I'd be surprised if that would be an interesting concept that he could transmigrate somebody. I don't think it's going to happen. I think we have that moment with Baron. I don't know why I feel bad that I don't know the quote, but I could have sworn that Towers of Midnight is going to overlap some of the Gathering Storm. And so, again, I wouldn't be surprised if we got some Baron in the next book previous to knowing what's going to happen to her, and that would be fun. But I don't believe that we'll get any real-time Perrin coming back, or Varen coming, especially with Moraine coming. I feel like Varen's kind of left us and Moraine's coming back. I kind of feel like that's going to happen. So I kind of doubt that we'll see anything with Varen again. Other than,
if I could somehow get into the Towers of Genji, that would be one of my wishes, that Varen would come back.
I would have to agree that I don't think we're going to, you know, we might get another glimpse or something like that in a flashback or something like that. But I really don't think that we're, as much as you know, it's very sad because I liked her very much too. I really don't think she's going to come back as an active, you know, participating character in the little bit that's left of the series. But I would like to think that maybe her last grand act was enough to get her bound to the wheel so that she could at least go to Teleron Riad and will be bound to the wheel in future lives.
I love that. I love that. So we can kind of have a Daniel Jackson.
She died and went to heaven.
Yeah, we can kind of have a Daniel Jackson moment with Varen. Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. So I'd like to think that her act was enough to bind her to the wheel so that she was able to go to Teleron Riad and you know, will be spun out again.
Yeah, but more than the warriors, how's she going to ride to the horn?
Maybe she'll
answer the call of the horn.
Yeah, we're going to have Matt blowing the horn, and out comes Baron with all her notebooks and starts unknown
yeah, baby.
The enemy. We don't know what these are or how she found them, but she has them.
She can blind him with science.
Well, that's another question I think I'm going to ask Brandon at DragonCon, which relates to those notebooks and whether or not we're going to. I mean, I'm sure, Egwene, I mean, we better get... I'd love to kind of have a moment where Egwene goes into her study, assuming it's still, it hasn't been destroyed. You know,
yeah.
It still exists, assuming it's still there, that she goes in there. And I can't imagine we're going to get too much there because there's a lifetime of information, but it would be fun to kind of have Egwene come back now as Amarillin, and walk through those doors and kind of realize the importance of that one moment when she met Varen and received the dream Teron Grail, and kind of, you know, it would be a nice moment to kind of bring Varen back a little bit in, you know, in thought versus actually having her come back.
Well, what if she goes into Varen's study and finds some key piece of knowledge that Varen didn't have time to impart to her or something. I don't know. Now I'm transmogrifying Moraine onto Varen. That's what I think may happen with Moraine, is she may come back from the Fins with some, you know, Tarangreal or Songreal that can help Rand to win the last battle, or some knowledge or something. That's my pet little Moraine theory. But it could happen with Varen posthumously if we got lucky.
Yeah.
Well, have any parting words, guys? I have to apologize. I'm kind of monopolizing things, and I'm sorry I do that. I'm bad.
Well, real quick, Matt, just tell them real quick where they can find Theoryland. What's the URL for that?
Sure. I mean, obviously, theoryland.com, or as somebody said when they saw our T-shirt, theoryland.com. and my children say that, too, and I'm like, shoot, you know. theoryland.com, the best place to find us, you know, I will review your, you know, replies. I'm really particular about reviewing replies on the site, so you don't get to post just anything to the things that people actually post, that I post on Theoryland. But the forums themselves, they're open. You can sign up. You can post whatever you want. Try not So if you want to find me or talk to me, go to the forums. Just click on forums and the link at the top of TheoryLine.com. And that's where you'll find everybody that comes back. And there's lots of people that have been there for 10 years, and they keep on coming back daily. And I'm always surprised that they keep on coming back, but they but they do. And we've been talking about this so long that we love, as much as some people feel like we kind of push, maybe we're a little too cocky in how we reply to things. We love when new ideas come on and new people want to discuss it just as, freaky fanish as we do. So come on down. We'd love to have you. And if not, write me an email. If you're at Dragonmount, I'm happy to come up there and discuss any of these theories that we've talked about today. So I'd love to hear your Varen ideas.
I think in conjunction with this episode, when we release it, we're probably going to also put out on the forums, but we'll start a thread specifically for this episode in response to that for two reasons. One, so that we can actually get some traffic on the forums, and also because the forums honestly are easier to navigate through than the comment section after each and every post on our website. So.
Sure. Yeah, and let me know where that's going to be. I'd love to come up and discuss it there. Yeah, like I said, that theory database, you can find it in the forums at theoryland.com if you're interested. It's in one of the first five forums as you come into the forum section if you're interested in looking up some, information you might have missed about the interviews and book signings that have been done. It's a nice compilation, so go check that out.
I will definitely do that.
One of the best resources there. So, yeah, especially if you're interested in the – I had this really long discussion with Brandon. It's like 25 minutes of me just throwing all sorts of questions at him. It's a – I think Luckers did post it on Dragonmount, so you can find it there too. So
okay. Great. Yeah, because, it's like all of us. It's just almost impossible to get to everything. There's just so much of the Wheel of Time. I mean, I'm way behind on reading Lee Butler's blog posts on the read-through. I mean, I'm just, everybody's got good stuff. They've just got good stuff, but it's hard to get to it all,
Yeah, absolutely. No, I hear it. So, I'm glad you kind of brought me in, and it's fun to mix it up with Dragon Mountain and the other sites out there.
Absolutely. Well, thank you again. And
feel free to edit down any of my rambling and take out and just leave the good parts. So I look forward to hearing it.
It's all good.
I'm sure I'll come on the forums and be like, I didn't say that. Not like that. There was this part. Yeah. It'll be a lot of fun. I'll be like, Spencer, you erased that really important thing. Sounds great, guys. Well, you have a good one, and I'm glad we all stuck around. It's been fun, and I think I should probably go and bring my babysitter back home. I'd have a babysitter simply so that no one bothered me. I didn't want kids running in and out because that happens all day since I work from home. So.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I can relate. No kids, but dogs. At least I can put them up if I need to. Okay, I'll let you go.
Thank you, Pat. Thank you so much.
Yeah, it's been great. Hey, thank you, guys. Nice to meet you. We'll talk to you later.
Yeah, you too.
Bye.
So, anyway, that should wrap up our conversation with Matt from Theoryland and the rest of us discussing one of our very favorite Aes Sedai, Varen. And so I want to say thank you to everybody, including Matt, who is now on. And thank you. I want to say thank you to everybody for joining us. I'm sorry Mark had to leave a little early. And Jesse, I know you've got to leave. Andrew, Spencer, thank you so much for making this a fantastic, fantastic podcast. And Spencer, thank you for the wonderful idea of inviting Matt. So this is Virginia saying may the light illumine you during these days of shadow and until we meet again.
And this is Jesse saying thank you so much to everybody for listening. Thank you guys very much for having me on again. It has been a while since I've gotten to join you, but I really, really enjoy recording podcasts and talking to all of you, and I miss it very much, and I hope to be able to join you guys again in the future.
And like everyone else, I just want to thank everyone. We didn't give out the contact information, but I think you've heard it enough. You know how to find us by now. Also want to thank, and we haven't done this in a while, we were going back in the episodes and to find out where this music is that we've been using, and we found the artist. And so we want to thank Josh Needleman, who is responsible for the music that the Fourth Age uses, and plug him and his work. You can find him at myspace.com/Josh Needleman. And he has a website, and I don't know what that is without looking it up. So
I think it's joshneedleman.net. That's J-O-S-H-N-E-E-D-L-E-M-A-N, I believe. And he's on MySpace. He does have his own website. And also the song that he lets us use is on his MySpace page. It's entitled Floodgate.
Yeah, like Virginia just said, so we really want to thank Josh Needleman. Thank Encyclopedia Watt for all their information. I know I used it a lot tonight. I'm not sure. I think some of the others did. Want to thank TalkShoe for this great service they have that we're using to record Dragon Mount, as always, for hosting us. And until next week, may you find water and shade.
It was definitely a fun podcast. I'm really glad that we were able to get Matt on. I'm glad to see Mark and Jesse come back on and be able to talk with us. Hopefully we'll get everybody and more back for future podcasts for myself, Andrew Gellows, and everyone here at the Fourth Age.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to episode 56, 57, 58, 59 of the Wheel of Rasa Fret.
I'm leaving that in there.
Oh, we're doing great.
Yeah.
Is this where Iron Man comes in and the Iron F starts dancing? No.
Oh, that would be great. Hey, I can play music if you want, but we've already gotten past that point.
See, now I've got the record for the quickest crossover and diversion in the Fourth Age.
Well then,
the only way we're going to beat that is if I actually incorporate one into the intro.
Yeah.
Okay, the challenge is there. The gauntlet is thrown down.
Crap.
Cage.
Oh,
it's the crossover cage match.